Now, we've got the election coming up. What is it, 2 weeks tomorrow? And interesting, a whole lot of people, you know, 10 or 15 years ago would have said, oh, don't forget we've got to go and vote on election day 31st. Well, it's not that way anymore. In fact, the turnaround's just been amazing. Let me read this. This is from Anthony Green's election blog. As a COVID-19 measure, the Electoral Commission Queensland is encouraging electors to vote early. This means the Queensland election will see a record rate of votes cast before the traditional polling day, 31 October, while the overall early voting rates will be exaggerated by the circumstances of holding an election under COVID-19 precautions. The switch to early voting continues a trend that's been accelerating over the last decade. It's just astounding because they're saying there's only 30% of people to be voting actually on election day. So it's going to be hard work for those people doing the sausages to make a few bob for their charities. I've got Dr. Paul Williams on the line, Senior Lecturer of Politics Journalism at Griffith University. G'day, Paul.
G'day, John.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, to say it's not that long ago, there was just one option you had, unless you were going to be away or in hospital or whatever. You went along and queued up with hundreds of others on election day. No longer.
No, that's right. It's a trend that's really taken off. And even if we didn't have COVID, I would have thought we'd be approaching 50% of us pre-polling or postal voting anyway, because, you know, anecdotally, people love it. It's people, if they can nip out in their lunch hour during the week and go and do a pre-poll in their lunch hour without a queue, it's very convenient. You know, I think that, you know, mums and dads would much rather take their kids to sport or do the family shopping rather than queue up at a polling booth. So clearly voters like it, and who are we to argue?
Can it have an impact on the outcome? For example, developments that might take place in the last few days, even last week for that matter, could that actually impact on the outcome?
Yeah, absolutely. As I've said before, it doesn't really shape the way people make their vote choices, but it really does shape the way that parties have to campaign to get into the heads of those people, of voters, to make their vote choices. And we're talking about swinging voters here, obviously. Swinging voters are about 40% of the electorate, I would say, 30 to 40% of the electorate, maybe 25 to 30% of the electorate are rusted on voters from one side of politics or the other. So it does, in the sense that when pre-poll opens tomorrow, next Monday, yep. We will see, we're built into a peak. So the campaign will be in two peaks. And we already sort of saw this in 2017, where the Labor Party had a very poor first week in 2017, but the LNP front-loaded its campaign with some very big policies under Tim Nicholls. And then, you know, listeners might remember when Anastasia Palaszczuk dropped that Adani bombshell on the end of the first week of 2017, where she said that there'll be no public money for loans for Adani infrastructure. And that proved very popular, and that really cemented her campaign. So the LNP was a wake-up, but Labor wasn't. This time, both sides are aware that you've got to front-end your campaign. So even before the writs were issued, you know, we had that big policy drop from the LNP regarding the $33 billion Bruce Highway promise, and Labor did its own on law and order with promising over 2,000 extra police. So parties know that they've got to have big ticket drops long before pre-poll opens, it'll probably be a bit of a lull, and then we'll see the last week, we'll see a second peak where they'll try and catch voters' attention. But the problem with that is, as you quite rightly say, is that if something dramatic happens, like a politician's got their, you know, been referred to the Triple C or something like that, or a politician makes some sort of huge gaffe, yes, those early voters won't have picked that up. And more to the point, costings aren't usually released until right at the end of the campaign, sometimes not until the Friday before election day. And that can be critical in how people might make up their, swinging voters might make up their minds as well. So, you know, there's no doubt that this is to allow people to many options to vote to ensure that we get maximum turnout is a wonderful thing. But yes, it's not foolproof. There are problems.
You talk about gaffes. Late in the campaign, I was so interested to see on television last night this LNP candidate in Townsville having posted on social media years ago a photo with, as he put it, the future Prime Minister of Australia, Pauline Hanson. Also, there was evidence of other most unfortunate statements. And this has come back to bite him years later. It's a real trap, isn't it, social media that way?
Oh, indeed. You know, we've seen politicians from all stripes being caught out with old posts. Sometimes, you know, you see a lot of young politicians 10 years down the track. They might be in their 30s and they post something when they're at university.
Yes.
They regret. Yes. This is not uncommon. And yes, we've all got to be very careful what we post online. It's a permanent footprint, not just for politics, but for our employers. Our employers check out our digital footprint. So, yes, we've all got to be very careful.
Now, page one of the Courier Mail, basically they've put in there as a bombshell. It's under the heading, shock figures, jobless rate here, worse than in the lockdown state. Work that one out. It reads that Queensland has recorded the highest unemployment rate in the country, behind even locked down Victoria, with 209,000 Queenslanders looking for work. It says the state's jobless rate rose to 7.7% in September, 1 percentage point higher than Victoria's. That's despite that state having been in COVID-19 lockdown for more than 5 months. It's a pretty surprising figure, to say the least, Paul.
It's a shocking figure. But of course, Queensland unemployment stretches far beyond COVID. Listeners would know that this is a figure that's haunted. Well, we're going back to really to the Bligh days, you know, the Bligh government and then the Newman government. And so, you know, it was Queensland's had either the highest or the second highest or the third highest. In other words, it's been at the wrong end of the spectrum for many, many years. And this is a recalcitrant problem that both LNP and Labor governments have had to grapple with. And again, I'm not an economist, but from my way of thinking, it's the regionalism of Queensland tends to exacerbate the problem, where we know that, so a 7.7 figure is a statewide figure, but you get into regional Queensland and the figure, of course, is much higher in pockets. And then you've got youth unemployment, which is much higher still. I mean, some pockets of Queensland have youth unemployment, 20 plus. Then you've got long-term unemployment. So it tends to be the regionalism, and that, Queensland is such a vast state. Most people interstate are shocked to learn that Brisbane to Cairns is further than Brisbane to Melbourne.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got the 1,000 kilometres between Cairns and the Cape. So I think the regionalism is a special challenge that Queensland faces that other states don't.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting next couple of weeks. Always good to talk to you, Paul. Thank you.
My pleasure.
That's Dr. Paul Williams, Senior Lecturer at Politics and Journalism at Griffith University.